admonition. The notions and sentiments declared by the gadabouts in this audio program are not endorsed by the Japanese Animation Information Network. I do hope the show meets your fancy.
Hey everybody, welcome back to AnCast. This is part two of our holiday special, our marathon length holiday special.
Which we're recording all in one sitting, by the way.
All in one sitting, but I am comfortable. My Christmas tree is lit. I have my eggnog slash brandy with me here.
You know what? Let me plug in my tree and I got my coffee. There we go. Okay, I'm a little happier now.
Yeah. So we're counting down our, in the first show we did, best anime, worst movies. Now we're going to do worst anime, best movies. Super fun times. So yes. Let's go ahead and get straight into it. These are our top 10, and just as a preface, in case you didn't hear the first show, these are not what we objectively feel are the 10 worst anime ever made. These are our personal worsts. Personally, these are the worst things I've seen.
And So Bad It's Good.
So Bad It's Good does not count. So no Violence Jack, no Mad Bull, nothing that's fun. These are painful. That's what we're going for, is pain. Pain threshold. So let's go ahead. Let's go ahead and get started. I'm really curious about this one. Justin, you go ahead and start. Your number 10 worst anime.
Okay, my number 10, which I've previously written about, is Idol Fighter Tsuchi Pai.
Shit. Yeah, okay. Let's
wow,
hear about
what
it.
What a steaming pile that was.
Is this a buried garbage?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And there is nothing fun about this. This is a half hour of excruciating pain, and if you get the U.S. release, with the boobs cut out. So even if you're a fan of the cartoon boobs, there is nothing here for you.
Wow. Remove all redeeming qualities.
Yes. It is just basically introduce as many characters from a strip Mahjong game as you can, make them jump up and down a lot. It's as bad as an OAV based on a strip Mahjong game could conceivably be.
Now, this was 90s, right?
This was mid-90s, yeah. And then, for some reason, Hiromeki brought it out in the U.S., even though the games had not been.
You know, for whatever reason, I'm reminded of that shit OVA Pioneer put out. It's like Hyper Doll.
Ooh,
it was a blockbuster picture.
That was on that was one of my number 11s.
Oh yeah, I couldn't track it down. I had no way of even seeing it, so I couldn't put it on my list.
Well, there were a lot of these shows that were kind of that were part of the OVA boom, that were inspired by Japanese pro wrestling, female pro wrestling,
mm-hmm.
And they're all pretty much the same thing, and they are all lousy.
Yeah. Wow. Yikes. You know, actually, I should mention, this worst anime list was a pain to put together.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was really difficult.
I was futzing with this right until the last minute.
Yeah, it's tough because mediocre is so much worse than straight bad.
Right, and straight bad's usually entertaining.
You see, right, there's so much bad, so bad it's good anime out there that it's hard to put together a list that doesn't have that on it. So, yeah, my number 10 I'm going to take so much shit for.
Oh, I think I know what this is.
My number 10 worst anime. Holy shit. God, I'm going to get crap for this. Pompoko.
Shit for me.
Yeah. God damn it, I hate this movie. And if it were American, you would hate it too, I think.
I don't think so.
Preachy and boring. Preachy and boring is a deadly combination, and Pompoko is both of those in spades. If these were cute little American raccoons doing this shit for what feels like 8 hours, you would hate it. Especially if it had, like, musical numbers in it or whatever. But the over-the-top preachiness, I mean, Jesus Christ, I get it, you know? It feels like this strained attempt at making little kids give a shit about the environment, and it's just like, ugh. Not that I have a problem with the pro-environmentalism, but goddamn it. Hated this movie then, hate it now. And I stand by my choice to put it on there.
Anger.
I know it's going to get me a lot of shit. When's the last time you saw it?
About a year ago.
Okay, all right. I revisited it just to make sure I wasn't completely blowing smoke out of my ass.
But it still makes me cry.
Are you kidding me? Really?
That scene near the end where they transform the entire village.
Yeah, to me that's just so treacly. It's so treacly. It's so obvious and just... Ugh. Pompoko. Yeah. the only Ghibli that I would maybe get a Senki. Maybe, but Pompoko.
Oh, fucking, you were, dude.
I know, I'm killing you with this. But the problem for me with Pompoko is it is easily the most boring Ghibli. And the over-the-top preachiness, just to me, it's a deadly 1-2 punch. It could not be on my list. Let's move on, because clearly... Let's move on. The rest of my list is less offensive.
Stabbing a stuffed animal over here.
Okay. Least favorite anime list from Man of Rust on the forums. Empty Geist. Easy.
Yeah.
Virus Buster Surge. Easy.
That's one of my number 11s.
And Sakura Diaries. Which is actually on a lot of these bottom lists.
I'd actually never seen it. I saw like one episode. I'm like, this sucks, and never saw more of it. But it didn't really raise any ire with me.
I think I got those tapes when I was just consuming everything, fan sub tapes of that, and it wasn't like the worst thing I'd ever seen. I don't know. I have completely neutral feelings towards it. I know it was kind of an early fan service show.
I kind of want to see it just because, for the bizarreness, because ADV dubbed it twice for the same market.
They did, and it is also one of the only Ujin shows you could put on a shelf without, like, a cardboard wrapper around it.
Right.
I think.
Yes.
Ujin. We hardly knew ye. Okay, number 9. Your number 9 worst anime.
My number 9 is one that I think almost everyone will agree with. Tank SWAT.
Never saw it.
Tank SWAT is the half-hour, recently made Dominion Tank Police OVA.
What do we mean, recent?
I mean, like, about 2 or 3 years ago.
Really? I didn't even know this existed.
It is directed by Romanov Higa, best known for Cat Blue Dynamite.
Ew, okay, yuck.
And it looks just like Cat Blue Dynamite.
Same, like, crappy cel-shaded?
Yes, with the, like, bad, flailing Muppet physics. If there was any way to take a franchise that's very near and dear to my heart, just shit into your hands and smear it all over, this is it. Wow. I'm sorry, Romanov Higa is the fucking worst anime director working today. I can say that unequivocally.
Wow, okay.
There is nothing this guy has done that doesn't smell like shit. I'm sorry, this guy, Stop. You know, he is the anime M. Night Shyamalan without the good track record.
Not the early track record, yeah.
Yes. He has never made anything that is worth seeing. Thank God Appleseed TV got canceled. Because he was going to direct
that. He was going to do that? Ooh, man. Yes. Dodge that bullet.
And now he is spawned. He has a protege. His name is Takt Aoki. And he just did this absolutely heinous OVA called The Asylum Session. Which
great.
Had really... I got a screener of that at TAFF last year, and it had really nice key art. And I popped it in, and I just... I couldn't chuck this out of the DVD player fast enough.
Wow. Okay. All right. Tank SWAT. Learn to avoid... It's only, what, it was a half-hour one-off release?
Yeah. And you know what? But it was numbered 01, so clearly someone had a spell of conscience at some point, but you know, the thing is, cel-shaded CG done anime style, I think it can look good if done right. It's hard. There's only a handful of shows I can think of that have done it in an acceptable way. One of them, Kakarenbo, but this is just kind of the most lazy, badly puppeteered, flailing attempt at crap. Just please, if you're going to do this, just stop, switch to another industry, try to go into video games where you'll be fired immediately.
Well, cel-shaded anime CG stuff works in video game cutscenes. It doesn't really work in film, I don't think.
Right.
Because it looks like a shitty video game cutscene.
Yeah.
Pretty bad. Speaking of shitty CG, my number 9 is a little OVA produced by Gonzo, called Zion, I Wish You Were Here.
I still remember your review of this.
Released in a box set by ADV, of course.
Of course.
This is sort of representative of all the garbage Gonzo has shat out. And they've shat out a lot of garbage. But this was incomprehensible. Had that sheen over it, where everything looks like there's a piece of plastic over it and a light, an indirect light source coming from the top. About a special forces guy who has to save a girl who has magical powers and can transform into this absolutely hideous looking CG creature that just super low budget. Looks like it was made in an early like 3D Studio Max for DOS. It just looks like shit. And it was, I think it was a web exclusive that eventually got released to DVD. But Gunzo put out a lot of this crap where it was like incomprehensible sci-fi with bad CG that they sold as this hyped up, oh, this future of anime, you know, like, holy shit, super slick production values, awesome. No, it was terrible. Absolutely terrible. Gunzo at the bottom of their creative powers.
And that's saying a lot.
Yeah, and of course, released by ADB.
Of course.
Okay. Okay, same guy from Super Deformed, bottom anime. Number one, Battle Skipper. Good choice.
Ooh.
Allison and Lilia, which I don't think I ever saw.
That one had really nice designs and apparently just did nothing with them.
Shat the bed.
Yeah.
Number three, Love Hina. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't put that on a bottom three list, although it is represented on my list later on.
Excellent.
Okay, you're number eight.
My number eight is something that you specifically said we would not be naming because it's so bad it's good. I take a different tack. It is so bad, it is beyond bad. That would be Violence Jack 2.
Okay, I never saw Violence Jack 2.
Okay, there's actually three parts that were kind of done as sequels rather than a straight linear progression. Violence Jack 2 was actually done by a separate staff from the first one and is actually so over the top with its brutality that it is, to date, the only anime I have ever seen in my life, and I've been watching anime for almost 20 years now, that left me emotionally scarred. with just because it's that brutal and seems to take such sadistic glee in torturing its characters to death. There is a scene early on where there is a couple, man and woman that are trying to escape the evil apocalyptic motorcycle gang. They pin the guy down, chainsaw off his legs, and then split his front chest cavity open, while making his girlfriend watch.
Uh-huh.
Then they cut his head off and force her to make out with it.
Edgy.
Yeah, and it, on one level it reeks of, you know, juvenile shock value.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I shouldn't be that freaked out by it, but there is something about it that it seemed to get off on it in a way I found utterly disturbing.
Yeah, well, that's the argument made against torture porn movies, horror movies, where they're getting off on it, and that makes you uncomfortable.
Right.
You know, once it's reveling in its own disgustedness. You know.
Right. I don't know. It's hard for me to put into words what sets this apart from the countless tentacles rape women till they explode hentai I've seen.
Yeah.
You know, because those are just as reprehensible on paper.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know. There is a mystery about this one to me that I don't know why it affected me so much, but I just, to this day, I'm just like, ugh.
Sounds terrible.
Yes. Yes. Let's move on.
All right. My number eight, yes, Love Hina eight. Again. not Love Hina the Christmas special, Love Hina again. The OVA where Keisuke, is that his name? Keishiro? I can't remember his fucking name.
I never saw Love Hina.
The wimpy male lead, his sister, who wants to fuck him, of course, comes back to the Hina in. I mean, it's a representative. The reason I picked this is because it's representative of Love Hina, I thought, was a passable harem comedy. An example of the harem comedy that kind of functioned. It wasn't awful, wasn't great, it was functional.
Mm-hmm.
Love Hina, again, turned it into everything that's awful about harem comedies. And that's why it's on here, is because it's really, really bad. And you wouldn't think, like, watching the TV show or the Christmas special, the Christmas special was pretty good, you wouldn't think anything from that franchise would be here, but this is so terrible. Like, they come up with an excuse, like, she wants to bang her brother, and they come up with an excuse for her to have to grope every female character in the show, where she's, like, doing research or whatever. So there's all these really, like, close-up shots of her, like, grabbing someone's tits or whatever. It's just disgusting, and it's like, ugh, and it's really contrived. It has supernatural elements to it. It's fucking terrible. Like,
Didn't they also switch to the really bad early garish CG?
Yes.
For this,
yeah, they did. It was really bad. It's second only. The only thing that's comes close to being as bad is the summer special, which is just an excuse for all the characters to be wearing like leaf bikinis and shit, and has the same awful wacky like let's take it into zany town. It's fucking terrible. Love Hina again. Blech. No, thank you. Never revisit again. Okay. Okay. Bottom three from A Simpson 2006 from the forums. Also, Can Akamatsu work? Itadate My Santa.
Ooh.
Yeah, Bamboo took shit for hating on that one. Arcade Gamer Fubuki, which I never saw, but I heard was pretty bad. I know you didn't like it.
No comment.
And number three, Magikano, which, a lot of harem. A lot of harem crap.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so number sevens.
Yes, go ahead.
My number seven is a short from Genius Party.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, Limit Cycle.
Ew, God. Oh, God.
Yeah. This short was so bad, it derailed the entire project. not just that movie, but the very fact that this short exists, I think, put people off from seeing the second half of Genius Party. It called into question the whole decision-making process at Studio 4 Degrees for me. How this got made, with what it, and how it turned out how it did, utterly baffles me. It is a 20-minute, excruciating, nonsensical, self-important piece of gibberish.
Wow.
Basically, James Dean-ish guy artwork flashes screensaver loaded with scans from a religion field manual, while droning narration talks at length about religion. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is such a show. It just brings the film to a screeching halt, and even some of the best work by some of the best animators in Japan cannot save this film after that. It just, the fact that this got made is deeply upsetting to me.
Wow, yeah, okay. Hard to, I mean, you drop something like that in the middle of this amazing celebration of creativity, and it's just like, okay, I've lost my faith.
Yeah, and it's not like there weren't any other bad shorts in Genius Party, but this was so far worse than any other piece of anime I've seen in the last 5 years that it's just appalling.
Well then, one reason, maybe one good thing that has come out of Genius Party not being released here.
Yeah, seriously.
People can't see that.
So, you're number seven.
My number seven, Origin, Spirits of the Earth. Gonzo's really, really god-awful attempt at making a Ghibli movie. Similar sort of character designs, over-the-top eco-message. Complete fucking failure from start to finish. Like, doesn't work. You can't care about the characters. The plot just kind of, it's like two movies mashed together. It's a terrible movie. I mean, it had a budget, I think, but the budget kind of runs out about halfway through. The CG is pretty shit. It's bad. It's a really bad movie. And, you know, a lot of studios in Japan, every now and then they'll take a stab at making a Ghibli. And this was Gonzo's stab at making a Ghibli, and it's fucking terrible. Like, it's really, really bad. I don't know what happened at the script level, but that,
you know,
that's where the problem
started. It's usually the script level where these things seem to go very wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. I don't know, I can't imagine anyone watching that and thinking, you know, this is passable, or this belongs on the shelf next to any of the other films like it. I mean, I compare it unfavorably to, like, the really boring parts of Steam Boy. Like, it's really bad. Like, it's a terrible movie. And it's the kind of thing where it's, like, it feels like it gets shown at film festivals because it looks like a prestige film, it acts like a prestige film, it sounds like one, but it's just awful. Just awful. Okay, from bottom three from Egoist, number one, Munto. Number two, Asura Crying, can't argue with that.
Never saw it.
Number three, Aki-Kan. Never saw that.
But I kind of like the first Munto.
That's the, like, self-made OVA, right?
Yeah, from Kyoto Animation.
Right, yeah. All right, moving along. Number six.
Number six. Nobody knows this one, so I'm going to have to explain it. It's called Megumi.
Mm-hmm.
I found this at, I think it was Book Off, last time we were in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a half-hour OVA that was given away for free by a nonprofit group that that concerns itself with the people that were kidnapped from Japan by North Korea in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. You talked about this a little bit on the show before.
Yeah. Hilariously, they dubbed it themselves in Japan.
Uh-huh.
And they released it on a DVD with, like, Korean and English on it. And they gave it away, but I stupidly bought it. And this almost got disqualified from my list as a so bad it's good. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, no, it's hilarious in parts because the dubbing is so inept. But I could not sit through this whole thing. I hit fast forward because it was just so painful. It's mostly old people having press conferences and crying. It's so over the top that it's just, you can't help but just, maybe if you had enough alcohol, it might be fun.
But I don't know, it's only a half hour.
I wasn't drinking.
Yikes. Yeah. It's, I remember you buying that and wondering what the hell it was.
Oh, Megumi, where is our daughter?
Jesus Christ. Yikes.
Yeah. Your number six?
My number six, the entire Saber Marionette franchise.
Ooh, that is some bad shit.
Bad shit. Got a pass back in the late 90s because it was anime, and mm-hmm. people would watch anything. I knew hardcore fans of it. I didn't understand why. It's ugly. It's boring. It's crappy harem type thing. The character designs are some of the ugliest shit. I mean, they're ugly as hell.
The story is very average Satoru Akahori.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of a... It's kind of a, oh my god, it's ripoff. Sort of a thing with these hideous... who was that guy that did the character designs? It looks like Obari. It looks like Obari.
Yeah.
I think it might be. That's how much research I did for this. But yeah, Saber Marionette, the whole thing start to finish, just terrible. And it had like three series and like a couple OVAs and yipe. And I put it all out here eventually.
Well, that also had the bad CG Saber Marionette again.
Oh, yes. Saber Marionette J to X. Ugh. Saber Marionette again, and then there was an original one that was like a prequel.
Saber Marionette R.
Yeah, ooh, Jesus Christ. Really bad shit. Like, kind of not as representative of the worst of the 90s as what I'll get to later on, but pretty close. Pretty close. I do not understand why it... I think it had fans because it was available and looked like anime. I think that's mm-hmm. that's why. Eugh, terrible. Blood Minus, bottom 10, or bottom 3. Number 1, Love Hina. All right. Number 2, His and Her Circumstances does not belong on a bottom list.
No, come on.
Give me a break. Number 3, Divergence Eve. Can't argue with that. Really bad. Do you remember that?
I saw like an episode back in the day. I'm like, wow, this is garbage.
Absolutely horrible CG and those character designs.
I remember on the forums, people used to refer to it as Divergence Boobs.
Yeah, well, which is an understatement. Good lord. Yep. Okay, you're number 5.
My number 5 is in Japan they thought it was so bad it was good, but it was not. Gundo Musashi.
Oh, yeah. Well, this was an ironic favorite among American fans, too.
Well, they never fan-subbed more than an episode of it.
Yeah, it was infamous.
Yeah. It looked like Chinamation. I mean, during the opening, the best foot forward that anime does... They clearly couldn't stay on model within the same cut. I mean, characters were literally morphing before our eyes. Not to mention the whole idea of Musashi with a gun is just retarded.
Who made that? It was somebody.
Monkey Punch.
Yeah, right. Monkey Punch. Okay. Yeah. That's why I think it got any attention to begin with.
Right, and it was just it was laughably heinous animation, really pedestrian storytelling. It was just kind of ultra laziness. Now, the first couple volumes, at least, did really well in Japan because lots of otaku there bought it. Ironically,
kind of like shitty game phenomenon.
Exactly. It was there. No one can stop Mr. Domino. Uh-huh. But brought over here in the context of all the shit that they try to sell to the American market from everywhere in the world, it's just kind of right down there with the crap that comes out of the rest of Asia. And it's just like, Japan, if you want to hold on to your title as the animation center of Asia, you gotta do better than this. My God, you gotta do better than this. Like, this is the stuff that you don't, that you quickly pass a quiet law to make illegal the export of.
Wow. Yeah, maybe I'll track it down someday. I never saw it, but I've heard tell. That was truly bad.
Your number five?
My number five, White Cross, Viceroy's Night Hunters.
Ooh, yep. Yeah.
Absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. Not terrible just because of the plot. I mean, I don't have a problem with the whole gang of Bishonen assassin thing. That's fine. But the 1-2 punch of absolutely terrible storytelling, like sub-American soap opera storytelling with ridiculous plots, clearly taking itself seriously. That was really the problem with it, is they had these insane plots, like people stealing organs, and it's just every episode beat the last one in terms of having a really poorly written mystery, lots of continuity problems, you know, mysteries that didn't make any fucking sense. But the animation was hideous. Like, really hideous. In terms of what we're talking about, like, character models changing mid-cut. Like, it looked really bad, super cheap. And the sequel was even worse, because the sequel was right when digital animation was starting to come in.
Oh, God.
And so, yeah, like, the cheapest possible shit you could get away with. And, you know, people kind of ate, at least female fans at the time, kind of ate it up, because it was one of the only games in town in terms of all Bishonen cast.
Right.
But
Now that market is vastly overserved.
You know, it's overserved. And then there was a boy band where the male leads of the show had a boy band that toured around, and the music was really bad. It's garbage. It is an example of, like, crass, like, cash in for a market. Really
very cynical stuff.
Yeah, cynical shit, badly done.
Yeah.
So there it sits at my number five, White Cross. Okay. Bottom three anime from Derek the Red. Number one, Agent Ica. Okay. Ultimate Girls, never saw it. Your favorite, Chimera.
Ooh, that's pretty bad stuff, although I would argue that Chimera might cross the line into amusing.
I would say so. I mean, I rented that back in the Blockbuster days, and it definitely had a so bad it's good vibe.
Yeah.
It's had a little bit of that going on. Okay, and your number four.
My number four is something CPM released, and I will to this day not understand why. Soryuden, Legend of the Dragon Kings.
This is a long-running show, too, wasn't it?
It was 12 episodes, but each one an hour long.
So it came out on 12 DVDs?
It only aired in Japan once a month. It wasn't an OVA, even though it was old enough to be, you know. It's actually based on what I'm told is a fairly good novel series by Yoshiki Tanaka, and he's the guy who wrote Legend of Galactic Heroes and Heroic Legend of Arslan. Legend of the Dragon Kings was originally published with Clamp illustrations and was really popular. And then they made a TV series, decided to throw away all the Clamp influence and just go the ugliest designs possible, the cheapest animation possible, and because they weren't done with the novels yet, tack on a it-was-all-a-dream ending!
God.
It was so bad. I think fans in Japan it was one of their biggest disappointments ever. It had this bizarre opening that featured nothing to do with the series at all, and it was the biggest clusterfuck, made worse by when CPM decided to dub it. They gave it to Matlin, their zero effort recording dubbing house, and it just ended up with the most stilted wooden crap dub, which I guess was fitting. There is nothing redeemable about Legend of the Dragon Kings. There is actually a separate UK dub that Manga UK released, and I did buy those, and I think Mike Toole has them right now, and I keep going back and forth as to whether or not I'm OCD enough to want to reauthor those.
That's getting into self-mutilation territory there.
I know, that's why, but I know, you know me, it's this uncontrollable compulsion.
Yeah. Right.
So, I don't know. It's really bad, and if I do that, you should probably check my arm for cuts.
Right, okay.
So, anyway, you're number four.
My number four is an obvious pick, but it had to be on here, Aiken. It had to be on here. You cannot have it on there. It's truly hideous. Like, one of the grossest things ever made, I think.
Beanbag chair boobs.
Yeah, well, it's a satire. It doesn't function as one. It functions as something that's absolutely hideous and unwatchable. It's not. It's extremely painful to sit through. It's really, really grotesque. I don't know who it's for. The manga ran, what, 15 volumes or something like that?
Yeah. And apparently, according to Media Blasters, it's always sold really well.
Of course. Of course it has. I mean, haven't they released the DVD like twice or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there you go. Really, really shit. Everybody knows it's shit. I don't really need to go into it that much. Aiken, truly hideous. Truly, truly hideous. Okay, from Kionan, one of our moderators. This is an interesting list. Bottom three, Dragon Ball, One Piece, Final Fantasy Unlimited. Two of these things are not like the other.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would argue over the Final Fantasy, but...
Final Fantasy was garbage. That was a really bad show. I almost had it on my list. It's terrible.
I don't know anyone that likes it.
Well, I knew one guy that was importing the Japanese DVDs and subtitling it when it came out. But he was also a Saber Marine AJ fan.
So sanity already called into question.
There you go. Dragon Ball and One Piece feel like sticking it to the man choices rather than actual, because neither of those shows are bad. Those aren't bad shows, I can tell you. Not bad. All right, so that brings us to your number three.
My number three is a little-known OVA called Bavistock 1. The actual full name for the show is Time for Action Series Bavistock 1. Hateshikanai Hyoteki Bavistock in Time for Action Bavistock 1.
Jesus Christ.
And then there's a sequel called Time for Action Series Bavistock 2, The Revenge of Turizyan... and then something in Japanese.
Okay.
It's this OVA kind of epitomizes what happened to in the OVA market right when OVAs started becoming a thing,
mm-hmm.
where all of the known talent in Japan was busy with TV series and maybe a movie, and they, you know, the market was hungry for video content, and they didn't really have anyone to make it. So pretty much any young idiot who had an idea to pitch could get a show made. And that's why we have all this absolute garbage being made in the 1986 to 89 timeline.
Right.
This is a post-apocalyptic, spaceships, distant planet. Let's break this guy out of jail and go on a mission. Sort of shows, except it makes no sense at all. The designs are hideous. The animation is crap. And by the second episode, they had completely run out of money and seemed to be animating entirely with their left hand.
Of course.
It was just... I can't even describe the plot because that I would have to... It's using an absolute to describe a hypothetical.
Wow. Okay.
This is a piece of garbage, and the only reason I even know a little bit what's going on is because back in the VHS days, one group fan subbed the first episode, and I cannot find this fan sub anywhere. I guess all copies have been burned.
Rightly disposed of and forgotten by time, yeah.
But my god, it's so bad, I'm surprised CPM didn't license it.
Well, if it's that old and that terrible,
right?
And even they had limits. You wouldn't think so, but they did.
Yeah, maybe. Very low limits. All right, your turn.
Okay, number three, Mouse.
Ooh.
Ooh. This is a really bad show. I mean, the first episode is... Okay, so he's a thief, and he has this cadre of girls who want to bang him. But the show steps into what territory when he goes back to his lair and his female cohorts are all wearing... made aprons and basically just start mashing his hands into their bodies and like cooing at him, please, you know, fuck me or whatever. I mean, over the top, just like sex slaves, basically, is what he had. That and he would pretend to be disgusted by it or whatever, or be like, oh, you know, get a nosebleed. But it was just so ludicrously kind of misogynist and disgusting. And the show was sort of insultingly over the top and just straight up awful. I don't know anyone who's seen it that thought it was good. I think I've heard one person defend it as like a fun fan service romp, but it's so just nasty that Jesus, this sort of is a 1-2 punch with Aiken in terms of nasty fan service shows that have no reason to exist but probably sold pretty well.
Wow.
I think that Media Blasters released that.
Yep. And I'm sure they made quite a bit of money on
it. At least a couple thousand bucks.
Yep.
Okay, bottom three from Tony K. Samurai Showdown, the motion picture.
That's pretty bad.
Mobile Suit Gundam Seed Destiny, which a lot of people really hate. I've seen that a lot. Samurai Girl Real About High School.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
Pretty bad, yeah. All right, so that brings us to number two. Your number two.
Number two is Genma Wars TV.
Holy shit. God damn, where do you even get... Are you digging this shit up?
I've seen a lot of bad animes.
Yeah, obviously.
Actually, Genma Wars TV, I hadn't seen it until, you know, I'd started doing Buried Garbage, and, you know, I have a few friends at Media Blast. It was Meredith, actually. I will blame this on Meredith publicly. Meredith's like, you don't know bad until you've seen Genma Wars. You have to write up Genma Wars.
Uh-huh.
And, like, they had stopped making it and had to dig up a copy for me. So she hands it off to me, and I pop it in, and from the get-go, it is so ugly and excruciating that I literally can't make it through a whole episode. Like, it is literally like trying to sit still while someone's running ice cubes down your back.
Jesus. That's pretty bad.
I mean, it's supposedly from the same source novels as Harmageddon, which, boy, there's a mark of honor there.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts off in a completely different category. It's very, you know, classic Tezuka inspired, where, you know, it's, you know, tales of old mysticism and, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and gods and that sort of, but it's impossible to follow. It's stupid. It's just, I don't know how anyone saw this and thought this was acceptable product. It's just something went wrong during production. That much I'm certain of.
Wow. And so this is basically forgotten by time, right?
Oh, completely. Like, I think you would, if you can find it on eBay, it's going for like 50 cents a disc.
Of course.
Yeah. But you cannot find this at retail anywhere. I'm sure they didn't even bother making that many of them.
Mercifully, yeah. Wow, that's pretty rotten. Holy crap.
Yep.
All right. Well, my number two scarcely needs much explanation. Kiss Sis. Can't believe it exists. Not surprised it exists, but still kind of can't believe it exists. Kind of everything that I hate about what anime is right now in one show.
Mm-hmm.
Don't really understand why we have to appeal so much to these weird-ass fetishes. Not that there's anything wrong with having a fetish, but it's gross, and the show is disgusting.
Yeah.
And makes me sad inside.
Sigh.
It makes my soul hurt.
Yeah.
I still take shit for it, for hating that show.
I don't doubt it, but Lord almighty.
I don't understand how something that's dedicated that much to that tiny a niche finds its way onto TV. I don't understand. I guess that's the market now.
Well, when your DVDs are priced where you make a profit after selling, you know, 5,000 units.
If that, 500.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. Okay, bottom three from Kid Tick. Number one, Redline.
Really?
Number two, Comfer. Never saw that.
Never did either.
Number three, Pale Cocoon. Super boring Ghibli alike from back in the day.
Not that old.
Yeah, well, 10 years ago, easily. Huh.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that bad.
To contrast, I do have to mock this guy a little bit. His number two top movie, The Matrix Revolutions. So not really going to put that much stock. No offense, no offense, buddy, but boo. Okay, so now we are down to the number one worst anime of all time, in your opinion. Go ahead, number one.
Oh, everyone saw this coming a mile away. Arcade Gamer Fubuki.
Okay. I didn't see it coming, but I didn't remember how much you hated that show.
It just the pure amount of rage I have spent over this one fucking show. the amount of enjoyment it has sucked from my life.
Did you have to work on it?
Twice.
Of course.
Because they hired my friend to translate it, and she hired me to help her with the subtitles. And then I had to go to work at CPM and then work on the DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And rendered the subtitles for DVD. And so it was just this 1-2 punch of just, this is the most awful, mindless crap that Japan could possibly produce. and it's all yours, and this is the world you have to inhabit if you want a paycheck this week. Just soul crushing. I've written enough about this. Yeah, what's your number one? Your number one, please.
Cyber Team and Akihabara. Released by ADP Films, of course. You know, this one kept creeping back into my subconscious over the years. It is everything that sucked about 90s anime in one show. Absolutely hideous character designs where everything looks like a jelly bean for some reason. And they're supposed to also be sexy, so they have like these weird squishy heads and giant breasts. And like, it was sort of a magical girl collecting animals ripoff. Oh my god, Cyber Team and Akihabara is really fucking terrible, and if you haven't seen it, just go watch the opening sequence, and you'll learn almost everything you need to know.
I don't know what it was about the design, the combination of the character designs and just the overall look of the show. It goes beyond bad and unpleasant into just somehow blinding and painful to look at.
It's almost like everything that was bad about the art form, the medium of anime, like got together and made a show. And what they came and this, you know, in 1997, and they came up with this shit, and it's truly hideous. I can't believe it got licensed and released here.
It was ADV.
Yeah, well, they must have just not been looking. I mean, it's dubbed and everything. Just shit, really bad. Production IG made the theatrical film.
Oh my god! was a theatrical film.
I don't know why it was popular in Japan. I mean, it was just hideous. Some people have tried to say, oh, it's supposed to be a satire. But even when it came out, it didn't succeed as a satire. It didn't seem like it was making fun of everything. It felt fairly sincere.
I think it was the first anime that acknowledged the existence of Akihabara as a nerd capital.
Maybe that's it.
I think there was some wank over that.
But it is, I think I can safely call it, I could safely call it the ugliest anime I've seen. It is I vomit. It is just, it's terrible. It's watching it, you know, like when you're really, really sick and you're and you're vomiting and have painful diarrhea at the same time. My reaction to this show is similar in that my body wants to expel the toxins. Like, it's clearly trying to get something out of my system.
It is the milk of magnesia of anime.
Yes. So there you go, Cyber Team and Akihabara, easily my number one worst, because it represents so much that was bad about anime in the 90s. Okay, and our final bottom list, get ready for this, from Slippery Bogle, number one worst anime, Summer Wars, really?
God damn it.
I don't know if he's trolling. Yeah, he's got to be trolling.
Well, I don't know. Someone, I don't know who it was, tweeted me, is like, this movie was terrible, you're wrong. I'm just like, I wrote that review like a year ago.
It was a year ago. Boy. Yeah. Voices of a Distant Star. All right. Black Lagoon. Okay. None of those belong on a bottom list, but hey, to each their own. All right. So now we can transition over into a little bit of positivity. We're going to wrap up here with our top 10 movies. Top 10
Thank
best movies.
God.
Yes. So this will be fun.
For us. I'm not sure how fun it'll be for everyone else.
Yeah. Well, plenty of people sent in their top tens.
Okay.
So I got a bunch of those. People clearly want to get into this. Okay, so let's go ahead and just dive right into it. Your best movie.
My number 10 best movie is a little-known indie film from the late 90s called Clock Watchers.
Yeah, you've mentioned this.
I love this film, and it's, I think, nothing so eloquently shows the mood and the hopelessness of being stuck at the bottom of the corporate ladder and just there being no hope for getting out of it, for climbing up. This film has Toni Collette, who everyone knows now from on the terrible Showtime show United States of Terra.
Yes.
but is honestly one of the best actors working today. And also in there is Parker Posey and Lisa Kudrow, both are really, really great in it. And they're all, it's a gal, there's three girls that are, or four girls that are, temp office workers at a credit firm. Just the most soul draining experience you could possibly imagine. Muzak is piped in, every day, and just every day more soul-crushing and awful than the last. Their office manager is a bitch. But it's not aggressively, it's not Office Space. It's less pointed and aggressive and angry. It's more, this is your lot in life, and about trying to get out of the rut of mediocrity that you might have dug for yourself, and becoming a self-realized person. And it's brilliantly written, very poetic in its use of voiceover. Just really a smart film, directed by Jill Spreacher, who also did 13 Conversations About One Thing.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that.
Yeah, the one good performance ever by Matthew McConaughey.
That's true.
Yes. So yeah, really recommended. It's either out of print, or the version that's in print is an inferior pan and scan version on DVD, but it's definitely worth seeking out, and occasionally it shows up on cable.
What year was it made?
98 or 99, somewhere in there.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah.
Your number 10.
My number 10 is The Fifth Element. I'm surprised at how much I still love this movie 10, 12 years later. It came around right when I was becoming an anime fan, and to this day is the most successful live-action anime-like thing that's ever been made, I think. I know you haven't seen it in a long time and sort of dismiss it, but it's a great action movie. It looks amazing. Still looks amazing. The Blu-ray looks fantastic. It's super fun. Doesn't take itself seriously at all. And it's just good time, start to finish. It's definitely one of those warm blanket type of things.
I might have to borrow that from you at some point.
Yeah, it's just great. Like, there's nothing about it that an anime fan who likes action movies and doesn't take himself very seriously wouldn't love. It's the soundtrack is amazing. The score is really awesome. I even like the stupid comedy sidekick character. It's just good. It's just good times. I had to put it on there as number 10. And you know, there were times, you know, when I was a teenager, 17 years old or whatever, it was my favorite movie ever. I think I saw it 7 or 8 times in the theaters. And since then, now it comes in at number 10 almost out of obligation. I mean, it beat out Boogie Nights and Adaptation for that number 10 spot. But I had to put it on there. I think I'll still be watching this movie when I'm in my 50s. I consider it to be a classic, a totally underappreciated classic, too. So yeah, that's my number 10. Let's go ahead and get to a reader list from Dan Nielsen, his top 3 movies. Number 1, Lawrence of Arabia. All right. Number 2, Blade Runner. Number 3, The Tarkovsky Solaris, which is really good. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, I have. It's I'm a huge fan of Tarkovsky, actually.
Yeah, and it's really good. And I am one of the few people that will defend the remake. I actually like the Clooney one.
I never actually saw it.
Great score. Great electronic score. Real movie. You should check it out. People give it a lot of shit, but it's pretty good. I mean, for what it is. It's not the Tarkovsky one, but pretty good.
Well, what is?
Right. Okay, let's go on. Number 9.
My number 9 is one of the seminal classics of film history and ever-present at the film school and film snob level. It is Fellini's 8.5.
Of course. All right.
I love this movie. It's by far my favorite Fellini movie. A lot of people will be turned off because it's old, from the 60s, black and white, and in dubbed over Italian.
But it's really entertaining. Like, 8.5 is really entertaining.
It's really entertaining, and please, please, please ignore the recent musical remake.
Oh God, let's not get into that. That almost made my bottom ten.
You saw it?
Oh yeah. Oh, how could I stay away? Everyone's saying it was terrible.
That's true. No, but it's basically it's a pseudo self portrait of Fellini as he's, you know, struggling creatively as a filmmaker and having to deal with everyone's heightened expectations of his success, and at the same time a really interesting look back at his relationship with women.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thrust of the film, really.
Yeah, it's really a love letter to all the women in his life, ultimately, and it's very wistful and nostalgic. I love the whole idea of, you know, the romanticized past, and that's what this ultimately becomes. And it's similar to, I would say it's almost a spiritual ancestor to Millennium Actress.
I could see that.
Yeah, you know, it deals with similar themes.
In a very
themes.
Vague way, but yeah.
Yeah, it's similarly themed and also deals a lot with the interwoven, somewhat dreamlike memories.
Yeah, I totally, 8.5's classic. I mean, it's out on Blu-ray too, so
Gorgeous Blu-ray, by the way. It's just the best that movie has ever looked. So, your number eight? Or nine, rather?
My number nine is Inglourious Basterds. Wasn't going to be on the list, but given how many times I've seen it at this point, and the fact that I'm at a point where Quentin Tarantino has not made a movie I didn't love. Like, love. I love all of his films. And this is easily his best. it's really fucking entertaining and just almost perfectly made. It's a little languid, but that's what I want from a Tarantino. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that most of it is subtitled. The performances are fucking amazing. It's super fun.
Who's the main bad guy in that? I forget his name.
That's Christoph Waltz.
The guy won.
Christoph Waltz, who's now the bad guy in The Green Hornet. So that's where his career is going. But he's easily the most fun thing about the film.
Oh, he's amazing.
But, I've talked about it plenty. It's the most recent thing on the list, but I can't imagine it not being there. It's a new classic. Something, again, I think I'll be watching 20 years from now. All right. Top three from Ed Sizemore, our friend Ed Sizemore. Number one, Blade Runner. All right. Popular pick. Number two, 1931 Dracula.
Hmm.
Number three, My Neighbor Totoro. Can't stay away from that.
Yep, seriously. All right. So, number eight?
Your number eight.
My number eight is a Japanese live-action film by Hirokazu Koreeda called Afterlife, known in Japanese as Wanda Furu Daifu, but they changed it here because that's obviously not going to work in the American market.
Right.
It is just the most thought-provoking examination of death and the afterlife I have seen to date. A lot of people will find it boring. If you're not the type that enjoys listening to old people tell stories, this movie is not for you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just intoxicating. It takes place at this something of a way station between Earth and Heaven. And the idea is that you have to pick one memory. It's an old schoolhouse, and you have to bunk there for a week, choose one memory from your past, film it, and that's the one memory you take with you as you pass on. Hmm. And it's about the staff that works there and what they have to go to wring those memories out of people. It ends up being as much about filmmaking as it is about self-examination of life and death. And it's just utterly beautiful and unforgettable, and it's... If you can appreciate slow and introspective, just honestly one of the best films ever made. I just can't recommend it enough.
Can you get this anywhere?
Yeah, there's a shitty U.S. release that came out years ago. I'm not sure if it's still in print. And it's also streaming, I think, from indiefilms.com or a couple of the online websites. I think it's on Netflix. But yeah, it's not too hard to find. The Region 2 has subtitles as well, and it looks a lot better.
That's a cool premise. I'm surprised it hasn't been remade.
I think it's too quiet.
Hmm.
Yeah, you know. So, anyway, your number eight.
My number eight is American Splendor, which don't think gets enough credit for being as good as it is. It's a biopic of Harvey Pekar, who recently passed away. He wrote the American Splendor comics in the 80s, 90s, and most recently. Probably my favorite biopic. It is so charmingly schlubby in the same way that Harvey Pekar was a professional schlub for most of his life, and his incredibly strange but totally sympathetic and relatable relationship with his incredibly strange wife, and their neuroses and his battle with cancer and his weird friends, and him translating all of this into these comics that eventually got drawn by R. Crumb, you know, famous artists like that, and he became sort of a local hero and eventually a hero in the indie comics world. It's a great movie. One I've seen more times than I thought I ever would. I saw it in the theater during its really limited run, ran out and bought the DVD when it came out. And it's one of these small little movies that sort of worms its way into your brain and won't let go. And I think I've seen it every year since it came out. Really great movie. And the fact that these people, I think part of it is that these are real people, like really real people. They are living on the screen. And the people, he's the man himself is in the film. They're sort of bookended with these segments that where he's filming his own, he's recording his own voiceover for the film. And so they're sure to include him. It's a great testament to his life. It's sad that he's gone, but the fact that this movie exists He'll never be forgotten for sure. But yeah, American Splendor, really great. Really great stuff.
Mm.
I don't know if you've ever seen it, but
I did see it. I liked it. I didn't have a big connection to it, though.
Well, our taste in movies is clearly quite different.
Very, very different.
From Bradley Meek, his top three, Seven Samurai. All right, 400 Blows. Okay. Life of Brian.
Hmm.
Interesting. I don't know about Life of Brian, but
yeah.
It's okay.
I'm not a Terry Gilliam fan at all.
I like some of his stuff. I like Brazil, and I like Baron Munchausen, but yeah, the rest of it. He's more fascinating as kind of a troubled guy than a director. Okay, so let's go on your number seven.
My number seven is, I have a feeling this might be on your list too, Brokeback Mountain.
Not on my list, but could have been.
This is possibly the most moving love story I've seen in recent years. And also, I think it's done, frankly, more for the more for gay rights than any film that's ever been made.
You think so?
I do. I think it took a subject that was kind of treated with kid gloves and kind of taboo.
Or camp.
Or just kind of looked at as a specimen.
Yeah.
And really humanized it and made it something that people, that straight people could relate to.
Yeah, well, anyone with a sense of humanity, for sure.
Right.
I think that you're right. You're dead on in saying that it humanizes that for on screen in a way I hadn't seen before. In a way where, and it's fucking devastating. The movie's really,
really
tragic.
It is so moving. I mean, unfortunately, you know, the world we live in, homosexuality is really kind of the last forbidden love. You know, now that everyone is at least superficially okay with interracial marriage, this is kind of the last frontier in love that nobody respects, and you know, it's you against the world.
Right.
So on that level, I think it might be, it's definitely the seminal movie in that category.
Yeah, outstanding performances. Like,
just
can't believe they pulled that off. I mean, it's incredible performances.
Just spectacular film.
Yeah, not, I mean, I think anyone interested in it has seen it at this point.
Right.
But yeah, definitely could have been in my top 10. Could have been.
Yep.
My number seven is Moulin Rouge. Which a lot of people hate.
I still haven't seen it.
Surprising number of people hate that movie. I love it just because it's... First of all, I love musicals. And this is probably... Next to Little Shop of Horrors, which almost made it on my list, this is my favorite. It is an example of postmodernism done perfectly, in my opinion. It's got some tonal shifts that I don't think work that well, but it's... so entertaining. The music is awesome. I love the way it's a pastiche in musically. They just sort of before mashups were popular, this was the mashup sort of musical with some amazing original songs in it as well. I love the visual look of it. I think it's probably the best thing Baz Luhrmann's ever made. I think it's a piece of genius. I think it's real art, and I think it's underappreciated. But I think a lot of people hate it because they can't handle the fact that it does mash up so many elements of pop culture into one thing, and it's supposed to be a period piece. But it doesn't function as one. It feels like someone's crazy art project, and that's what I love about it. But yeah, absolute classic. I've loved it since it came out. Seen it a million times. All right, top three movies from Ryan Sinise. Lord of the Rings. I guess he means all of them. Braveheart and Collateral. That's some manly man choices right there. Collateral's a good movie.
It's not bad.
It's probably Michael Mann's certainly the best thing he's made in a while. I mean, Public Enemies and Miami Vice were pretty rotten.
Ugh, Miami Vice.
I'm a fiend for mojitos. Okay. All right. Moving on, your number six.
My number six is, I'm a big fan of director E.Y. Shinji, but this is the only one of his films that have been released stateside, so I limited it to that. This is his film All About Lily Shushu.
I've heard of this. I've never seen it.
It is, again, this one is a little slow, and you just kind of have to sit in it. It's basically 3 years in the life of middle school, and it is basically just the most soul-crushing, awful thing ever, like in the boonies of Japan, like, you know, rice paddies everywhere and the like. From, you know, the bullying and the awfulness is his website devoted to his favorite pop star, Lily Shushu. They actually invented a whole pop singer for this. They even released an image album of hers, and it's really good stuff, very Beatles, late Beatles influenced. But the film itself is really just kind of this dreamlike, is this really happening, dull throbbing acceptance of awful that is pretty close to how I remember middle school. And it's some really hard scenes to watch, but it's really some amazing acting. And if you can, if you have the patience for it, it's well worth it. The first time I saw it, I came away from it not knowing what I thought of it. And it was one of those that, you know, the more I thought about it, the more I loved it. And sooner or later, I was importing the 2-disc Region 2s with no subtitles and getting the soundtrack CD, and I guess I like it.
It's funny how that happens, where you walk away from something going, oh, it's pretty good, and then 6 months later you're like, I have to see this again.
The best stuff is like that, I find.
Yeah, I think actually, like, American Splendor is definitely like that for me. Okay,
so you're number six.
My number six is Untitled, also known as Almost Famous, but specifically the Untitled cut that Cameron Crowe put out on DVD afterward. Because it fixes a lot of the holes that the movie had. I'm a big fan of Cameron Crowe, and this is easily his best movie. A lot of people point to, like, Say Anything as, like, his best. No. Almost Famous is a really, really great piece of personal filmmaking that is absolutely fascinating from start to finish. I love the characters. I get wrapped up in this movie so easily that it's one of those where if it's on TV, I have to finish it. I personally relate to it because it's about a writer who gets involved in a world that's sort of over his head. He, you know, his relationship with his mom and stuff like that. I mean, I relate to it on a very personal level, but it's also just an incredibly well-made film, incredibly well-told little personal story that resonates with me. A great soundtrack, really picks up, evokes a time and place. Easily his best movie. I don't think he has a better one in him, especially after he made Elizabethtown. And Vanilla Sky. But yeah, Almost Famous. It continues to be one of my favorite. I saw it a couple times in the theater, and the Untitled cut, which is not as easy as it should be to find. DreamWorks only released it once, and the Blu-ray doesn't have the director's cut on it.
Really?
No, it doesn't. And it hasn't been released in the US yet, but the UK version doesn't have it. So if you can find the DVD, pick it up. It fills
in
a lot of
holes. I enjoyed that movie in the theater. I don't think I could... I don't think I need to watch it again, though.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It was definitely one of those where I walked out of it going, wow, that was really good, and then, it, you know. gotta have it. Yep, absolutely gotta have it. I think just personally I relate to a lot of it. It is something I personally really much attach to. Top three from Chrono the Sinner. He says, number one, The Wizard. Now, I don't know if he means the Fred Savage movie. He could. If that's what it is, that's what it is. Number two, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Not on my list.
Not on my list, but I do like that movie quite a bit.
Yeah, it would have been there. That's an easy number 11. Number three, Shaun of the Dead. Yeah, there you go.
I like Shaun of the Dead. Love it.
It's fun. It's not a love kind of a movie, but yeah, there you go. Your number five.
My number five is a Russian film called The Return.
I have
not
this,
to be confused with the Sarah Michelle Gellar film.
Right. Now, this is on Netflix streaming if people want to see it.
Yes. It is the most heart-stopping suspense film I've seen in many, many, many years, if ever. And it's about these two brothers who you know, live alone in the desolate Russian countryside with their mother. They've never known or seen or heard anything about their father, but he just shows up one day and says, I want to take you on a road trip.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother seems, you know, utterly helpless to stop him. So the older brother is so starved for a father figure that he'll just go along with whatever. The younger brother is immediately suspicious, doesn't know anything this guy's up to, where they're going, what they're doing, what this guy is mixed up in, what he might get them mixed up in. And he has good reason for being suspicious. The guy is fucking creepy and won't tell them anything. And it goes off in some very unpredictable directions. And the kid in it is like Haley Joel Osment in Sixth Sense good. Just unbelievable. Tragic footnote, the kid that played the older brother drowned in the same lake they filmed in a few weeks after filming Wrapped.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So that's kind of a sad note, but the film is just incredible. Just it's like incredible.
It's like a Atreyu's horse in Never Ending Story.
Yep.
He died in that quicksand.
God. We shouldn't be laughing at this.
It's true. It's also an old internet thing. So The Return. All right. So that's on Netflix streaming if people want to see it. It's super obscure. Okay, my number five, easy pick, probably on a lot of people's top tens, 2001 A Space Odyssey. Don't really need to go into it too much, but love that movie. I can sit through it any time. People call it boring. I don't think it's boring. I could sit there and stare at it forever. So there you go.
I don't get it.
Not a fan? Yeah.
No, it left me cold.
I mean, if one thing I can absolutely say between the two of us, I have my taste and stuff is skewed more towards things that I enjoy looking at.
Right.
There's a lot of visuals mean a lot to me. Aesthetic means a lot to me.
Not just navel gazing.
Yeah, not just technical competence. I want it to be pretty, and 2001 is gorgeous and totally thrilling from beginning to end.
I find it lacking in humanity.
Oh, it's totally cold.
Yeah,
but I like that. I also think it's entertaining, which a lot of people don't. People think it's really, really fucking boring. Okay, Kyokun 703. Her top three movies: Clueless. Yeah, it's a classic, I would say. Teen classic. Searching for Bobby Fischer, which I haven't seen in forever.
Me neither.
And How to Train Your Dragon, early pick. Certainly in my top 10 for this year. Probably in my top 5 for this year. But I wouldn't put it on the top 3 yet.
Still on my list.
You gotta see it. I think you'd really enjoy it.
I know.
Stop avoiding things people tell you are good.
I know. It's not a matter of avoiding. It's a matter of just I've been so busy this year.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, you're number four.
My number four, the Albert Brooks, Holly Hunter, William Hurt romantic comedy from the 80s, Broadcast News.
That's a classic.
Oh, it's one of the best realized romantic dramedies in film history, I think. The characters are so fully fleshed out and believable. And, of course, being a child of those raised in the editing bay while my dad worked on crappy local commercials, I dug looking at all the old 80s video gear.
Right. Well, I mean, you want to see a guy at the top of his form, Albert Brooks in the 80s. I mean, Modern Romance, Defending Your Life, Broadcast News.
Oh, seriously.
Great fucking movies.
Although he didn't direct this. He only starred. This was actually a James Brooks.
Oh, right, yeah. No, yeah, also at the top of his form in the 80s.
Yeah, seriously. I don't know. I kind of fell in love with Holly Hunter in this role.
Right.
She was just so cute as the spunky, indescribably energetic, indescribably anal retentive segment producer. I was ecstatic when I found out that Criterion got the rights to this, and apparently a Blu-ray is coming in a couple months.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, right. I cannot wait. This is just some great moments in this film, like Albert Brooks' character, the completely unlikable reporter who's just trying to get a break, and they give him one weekend anchor spot, and he breaks out into this amazing flop sweat. Just like, it's almost like someone has a fire hose turned on his back. It's just some hysterical stuff, but it's very adult humor.
Yeah, that's something 30-somethings would take a date to see in the 80s.
Yes,
for
totally.
Sure, for sure. Definitely good. That's a good pick, though. I like that one.
Your number four.
My number four is Ratatouille, which would have been in my top three, but got edged out. I cannot really describe how much I love Ratatouille. I think it's still Pixar's best movie. And I will admit to just having a severe weakness for it because of the topics that it covers, just the themes it covers. My favorite comedian is the lead, Patton Oswalt, who does an amazing job. And, you know, they always talk about, well, we picked him because he can talk, like, he's a true fan of things, has a real passion for art and nerdy stuff. And that is imbued in that character, of just having a passion for art. And this is a supposed children's movie that ends with a soliloquy by Peter O'Toole about the relationship between art critics and art, and the critic's responsibility towards an artist. And it's an incredibly sophisticated take on the subject, and a brilliant script. I fucking love this movie. It makes me tear up every time I see it at the end. I easily their best film. I think Brad Bird's best. A lot of people point to Iron Giant and sometimes The Incredibles. I think this is his best movie, probably his most personal, just in terms of things that matter to him as an artist. And yeah, I mean, I'm a big cartoon nerd. I couldn't have a top 10 without a cartoon on it, and this is the best cartoon, in my opinion.
I agree wholeheartedly. I love Ratatouille, and not just because I'm a food nerd.
Right. Well, that's what I love about it, because you can substitute food in that movie for any form of art, any kind of art, and right. It works totally, you know?
It's really, really well realized, and frankly, the only recent Pixar movie that doesn't have some really significant narrative bumps.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Well,
I suppose the recent Toy Story doesn't really have that problem, but WALL-E and Up both do.
Up more so than Up kind of falls apart in the last act. WALL-E stays pretty solid throughout, I think. The last 20 minutes of Up get into serious, wacky cartoon character territory that the rest of the film doesn't justify.
Yeah, that's true. Although I do love both movies.
Oh, I love them both. We're talking about Chinks and a Beautiful Piece of Armor.
Right.
You know, little tiny mistakes. But Ratatouille, still their best movie. Don't know if they'll ever top it, at least not for me personally. So that is my number four. And our top three from Forums User Pantha. Gone with the Wind. It Happened One Night, great movie.
I love It Happened One Night.
And Shawshank Redemption, which is on pretty much, it's a very popular sort of my favorite movie thing to list.
It's a very good film.
Oh, it's great. It's, you know, Cable has turned that movie into a classic. Endless showings, yeah.
I'm kind of happy that I'm not exposed to the Cables bludgeoning me over the head with certain things.
that
movie is still special to me.
That's a great film. It is eminently watchable. You can watch it anytime.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, your number three.
My number three is a tie, so you'll have to indulge me.
That's okay.
Between two seminal being a teenager sucks dark comedies from a female point of view.
Mm-hmm.
One is Welcome to the Dollhouse.
Uh-huh, classic.
And the other is Ghost World.
I knew you were going there. Great movies.
Yeah, I love them both equally in almost the same direction. They only diverge a very little bit. Welcome to the Dollhouse, just in a classic New Jersey, everything is just kind of gross sense.
Yeah.
The attention to detail as to how many things are just failures in a Todd Solondz movie is great. And Welcome to the Dollhouse, I think, is still... He's done a number of great films, and this is his best one still.
It's also his most accessible.
Yeah.
By far, I would say.
I have to say I really like palindromes, too. Mm-hmm. But the Welcome to the Dollhouse, you know, it's a... Don Wiener Dog, whatever her last name is, just the most unhappy, unattractive teenage girl on the planet with a miserable... It's just, you know, her being miserable, and that doesn't sound like it's funny, but it is. It's just you enjoy watching her be miserable because she's such a miserable sod of a character. Ghost World is kind of the self-aware version of Welcome to the Dollhouse. It's very L.A. metro area, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely Thora Birch's best role.
Sure, I could say that.
It's the two girls, the two snarky, nerdy girls in high school that you probably knew who had a really dark, edgy sense of humor.
Right.
You know, typical line, I hope he doesn't get AIDS when he date rapes her.
Ghost World is a great movie. Yeah, Ghost World's a the Criterion's got that one, right?
No, I don't think so.
Then there's art floating around for some special edition Blu-ray.
Oh, I hope so, because yeah. That movie is so quotable. I mean, I have a whole subsection of friends that, you know, you could... all you have to do is do one douchey thing that they observe in that movie and get instant recognition laughs.
It's a justifiable classic. It's Wyckoff's best so far, I think.
Yeah, totally. And definitely a reason why Art School Confidential was such a disappointment.
Oh, no shit. God. Yeah, I remember that. It's like, well, this isn't anywhere near as good as Ghost World. My number three is Ed Wood. Tim Burton's biopic of Ed Wood, which is absolutely fucking phenomenal.
I love that movie.
It is... He peaked with this movie, easily peaked. He hasn't made anything anywhere near as good since. And I don't know if it's because he dumped everything he had into this one, but it's just incredible. Like, that movie, it's the perfect biopic for Ed Wood. Absolutely perfect. Totally entertaining from start to finish. You love all the characters. You know, Bela Lugosi, totally lovable character. Quotable. Beautifully shot in black and white. Perfect. I think it's flawless. I cannot think of a single thing about that movie I didn't love. Absolutely love. And the fact that I keep going back to it and keep going back to it and keep going back to it. I mean, if it wasn't number one, it had to be somewhere on the list at the top, and it wound up at number three. But I could easily swap it out. My top five, I could swap them out. Really,
not to mention it. It's got possibly one of the best rants in cinema history.
Yes, I mean the whole thing's memorable. There's not a non-memorable scene in it. It's sort of burned into your head. I don't know. It's I cannot believe that the man who made that made Alice in Wonderland. Just can't get my head around that. But that was sort of the last movie where he didn't climb up inside of his own aesthetic ass. Because after that was Mars Attacks, Sleepy Hollow, which wasn't bad, but not great.
Johnny Depp and white-faced movies.
Yes. Which was, that's what, to be fair, what he was doing in Ed Wood, but it worked because it was in black and white, and that's what that character was supposed to look like.
Right.
Johnny Depp, great. I mean, he's a great actor. He's so good in Ed Wood. Like, that goofy smile is so perfect. And I like the fact that it doesn't cover Ed Wood's really, really tragic final 20-30 years or so. sticks to the bright and shiny part of his life, the relatively bright and shiny part of his life. Okay, so top three from Scott Spaziani, who's been on the show before, has his own podcast. His top three: Forrest Gump, Star Trek The Wrath of Khan, and The Empire Strikes Back. Pretty safe nerd choices right there.
Yep, I'm not a huge fan of any one of those, but I definitely can respect it.
Yeah, I just couldn't put any Star Wars on my list or any Star Trek or anything like that. I mean, I love those movies, but whatever. Star Wars. Yeah. Okay. All right, you're number two.
My number two is the silent 1927 Metropolis.
Okay, now, the original or the restored?
Well, there's so many restorations.
The most recent one.
Can I tie it between the 1980s restoration and the new one?
Yes.
Okay.
There's no rules here.
Okay. The first silent movie I ever saw was the Giorgio Moroder 80s pop restoration that he released in the 80s.
Which is really cool.
It's really nifty. And because, you know, music back then was all about electronic sounding things.
Yeah.
It kind of works with the sci-fi ethic.
Hmm.
Especially the other world, the now otherworldly sci-fi for 1927 aesthetic. Obvious, much has been written about Metropolis. I mean, everyone knows that it's influenced pretty much every piece of science fiction ever since. But that said, it's also a really, really compelling film. And the new restoration that came out last year and is just out on earlier this year and is just now out on Blu-ray, you know, takes the missing 20 minutes and really makes it a much better film. Like, the flaws that the narrative had before, because so much had been cut out of it, are completely fixed, to the point where it so changes the film for the better that it more or less forces a complete rewatch of the film and a reevaluation of where it stands. It's just a truly great thought-provoking, brilliant piece that still holds up really well today.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a classic for a reason. I think a lot of people haven't seen it because it's silent. I think people think it's long. It's not really that long.
The new version is.
Yeah, well, okay. Yes, that's true.
Well, new version, well, not
I don't notice
by
it.
Today's standards, it's like 220.
Yeah, right. That's not as long as Harry Potter.
Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's if you haven't seen it, see it. Jesus, if you like movies, good Lord.
Yeah, it's, this is one of those things where if you consider yourself any sort of expert on cinema and you haven't seen this, you really need to just shut up.
Also, if you really like science fiction, you're looking at the embryo of science fiction filmmaking. I mean, it influenced everything that came after it.
And not to mention an embryo that holds up really well today when almost everything that's more than 20 years old doesn't hold up at all.
Yeah, there you go, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, you're number two.
My number two, obvious, There Will Be Blood. I've mentioned it a billion times. If not my number one, my number two could have been my number one. Put it at number two anyway. Modern classic, loved every minute. I've talked about it to death, so I don't really feel the need to go on and on about it. But I'm not sure Paul Thomas Anderson's ever going to be able to top it. But he's continuously made one good movie, one movie that's better than his previous one over and over and over again. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah,
I love that movie. Not list worthy, but I love that movie.
Yeah, I mean I remember texting you when I walked out of it, saying like, "It's a fucking masterpiece," and then you walked out of it and you were like, "Yeah, it's pretty good." And I'm like, "No, you don't understand."
No, I love that movie. I legitimately love that movie, but I'm not quite to the maniacal extent that you do.
Yeah. I've since purchased three different posters for it. My most recent one is hanging over my TV.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Love that movie. Okay, top three favorite from Larry Nunn from the forums. Let's see here. Monty Python and the Holy Grail. All right, Star Wars. Okay, Spirited Away. Favorite anime film of all time. I think that's probably true for a lot of people, I would say, Spirited Away. They're not as cynical about Miyazaki, maybe, as we are. Okay, so here we are, at the end of all things. Number one, your number one movie of all time.
My number one film of all time, Morvern Kallor.
Yep, knew where this was going, but maybe the crowd didn't.
The ultimate mood piece movie. Girl in Scotland, she wakes up on Christmas morning to find her boyfriend has shot himself, and right after finishing his novel, which is pretty much the ultimate act of, you know, self-indulgence, really. And not really knowing what to do, she decides to dispose of his body and use the money in his bank account that he intended for his funeral to go on a trip to Ibiza. Oh, yes, and submit the manuscript to publishers in her own name. Hey, he's dead.
Right.
And although that sounds horribly callous and terrible, it's really, you know, when you see what she's going through, it kind of makes sense. And so she takes her best friend Lana, who's just this party, you know, kind of dim party girl, to Ibiza with her. And she's just really not happy in Ibiza. It's just not her thing. And she ends up, you know, venturing off and just finding her own thing. But the whole experience is set to, you know, the eclectic music that is on a mixtape that her boyfriend left behind for her. And it's just kind of this mood where you're lost in the world and you don't really have a sense of direction, and you want to go somewhere, but you're almost, you're distracted by shiny things. And it's adventure, and it's life, and it's things that, and it's finding your way, and it's things that work and things that don't work. It's just a brilliant piece of filmmaking. And Samantha Morton, who plays the lead character, Morvern Kallor, performance of her career, and she is a brilliant, brilliant actor, and she has never been better than this role. It's not for everyone. It's a weird-ass movie, but
Yeah, no, I saw it. I rented it on your recommendation, and I enjoyed it. It is definitely you talk a lot about how you like to wallow in a movie, and I think I do that with There Will Be Blood in the same way that you do it with this, and you know, the very different films, but in terms of just straight up tone and environment and mood, I think there is a similarity there. But it's worth saying.
What it
worth
says
saying.
About us that those are the movies that we wallow in.
Oh, we're weird guys.
Yes,
yes, we are. Weird, ponderous people. My number one has been my number one for a while, long time. Rushmore, easily. Easily my number one movie of all time. It is a personal favorite. I think it's Wes Anderson's best movie. Fantastic Mr. Fox might be better. But I love this movie. I love the characters so much. And the script is incredibly tight. It's very well paced. It's incredibly funny. The characters are amazing. The storyline's amazing. It has so much to say about adolescence and misplaced genius in the high school system. I just fucking love that movie. And it always comes up. Like, what's your favorite movie? Oh, Rushmore. Easily. And, you know, I could swap it out with any of the ones in my top five and be just as happy. But Rushmore, it's a sentimental pick for me. It's always going to be up there.
You know, I've seen Rushmore, and I don't know why I didn't make a connection to it, but I didn't.
Which is weird, because you always talk about how you were a sort of ahead of his time, you know, acting like you were an adult when you were a teenager.
That's it. That's exactly why I didn't connect to it, because I hated that. It's like watching myself and being annoyed by me.
But he's so charming.
he's not charming. He's annoying. You want to punch him.
No, you don't. Stop it. Don't speak ill of Max Fisher.
Fair enough.
I love that character. I mean, yeah, he's an annoying little git, but that's part of the charm. Like, he's supposed to be. Like, whatever. I love that movie.
It's like having all of my misplaced adolescence thrown back in my face.
Okay, well, I didn't quite... I connect with it as a story I love and characters I love. I'm not sure I had quite as personal a connection to it, but to me, it is kind of exactly what I want from a comedy, and also has some nice things to say and has a little bit of drama to it and some great dramatic moments. And yeah, I think it's an extremely promising filmmaker working at the height of his talent, and one of my all time favorite filmmakers too. I don't think I'm ever going to get sick of Wes Anderson and his tweeness. I don't think it's ever going to bother me. I don't know why.
Well, I loved Fantastic Mr. Fox. I'll give him that.
Right. Okay. So what I did for our last top three was I sort of looked through and compiled the stuff that got the most, found itself the most on people's lists. Basically, there wasn't a lot of overlap, but what overlap there was quite obvious in terms of what found its way onto people's top threes. And if I to judge based on the about 100 or so, maybe 150 lists I got in of people that picked top three movies, the most common number one wasn't incredibly common, but fairly common. Number one was The Dark Knight. Number two was I just have to lump them all together, any one of the Star Wars movies. And number three would be a tie between any one of the Lord of the Rings movies and The Princess Bride, which...
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah. People love that movie. that people still quote the shit out of that movie. And it's a good movie. I mean, it's a classic. My parents took me to see it when I was little, and I own a copy of it on Blu-ray, and I pop it in every couple of years.
You know, so many people have these very strong emotional connections to all three of those movies, and I don't get it.
Yeah, well... I think people can look at your top 10 and figure that out.
Right.
figure out maybe why that is.
Clearly I'm the outlier here.
Hey, you have eccentric taste, and that's unique, and it's more fun when our lists aren't exactly the same or have, you know, a bunch of overlap or are obviously in line with each other. It's more fun that way.
But I do hope that people will listen to these lists and check out some of the things that they haven't seen or might have heard about but never really got a chance to check out.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Okay, so that brings us to the end of our holiday specials. And that is a lot of show, so hopefully...
Holy shit, I'm just looking at the connection here. We've had the record button depressed for 3 hours, 44 minutes.
Yeah. Enjoy, everybody.
happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays, everybody. Have a great holiday. We will see you all in the new year. And personal thanks to everybody for listening to Ancast over the last year. We love each and every one of you. Maybe not some of you, but almost each and every one of you. So,
see you, some more than others.
So sure. All right, we'll see you all next year, and have a good one.